Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack. Daf Mem Zayin. Today's daf has been dedicated in memory of Moshe ben Sabahiyya. Ruach Hashem Tanihinu Began Eden. Amen. Today's daf is also being studied. Le'ilu Nishmat Rabbi Baruch Rafael ben Miriam. Zichrono Levracha and Abraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanihim Began Eden. Amen. We are actually on Daf Mem Vav Amud Sheni. And 10 lines from the bottom. We are going to start from Rame Le Abaye Le Rabbi Yosef. It's actually the fourth wide line. Rame Le Abaye Le Rabbi Yosef. Abaye brought a contradiction or question to Rabbi Yosef. Mi amar Rabbi Shimon kavta mutar letaltela. Rabbi Shimon say that when the Ner finally goes out on Shabbat, then it's permissible to move it. Kavta in. Only when it goes out. Lo kavta la. But if it did not go out yet, so long as it's still lit, it is forbidden. Ma'i ta'ama. What is the reason? Why, when it's still lit, does Rabbi Shimon forbid to move it? So the Gemara says, Dilma bahadeh denakitla, that maybe that while he's moving it or holding it, kavta, it might go out. So we're concerned on the gezerah here. Which means if you're going to let the guy handle a lit ner, there's a chance that it might extinguish. And therefore, we forbid him to move it so long as it's still lit. So the Gemara says, if that's the reason, Hashem Reina Nil Rabbi Shimon, Da'amar Davar She'en Mitkaven Mutar. What's the problem? We know Rabbi Shimon holds of the opinion of Davar She'en Mitkaven. Which means if you didn't have Kavanah, and the melacha happened, it's mutar. So therefore this fellow that's moving the ner when it's lit, he doesn't have kavanah to extinguish it. So what should be the problem? Why should Rabbi Shimon oser? Because he might come to extinguish. It's enu mitkaven. And according to Rabbi Shimon, if it's enu mitkaven, it's permissible. So that can't be the reason. Netanya, now how do we know Rabbi Shimon holds davar she'en mitkaven mutar? Netanya, because we have a braita. Rabbi Shimon omer, gorer adam kise. Mitav v'safsal, a person is out to drag on the ground a chair, a bed, or a bench. Ubivad shelo yitkaven la'asot haritz. So long as you don't have intent to make a furrow, because then you would be transgressing, let's say, choresh. However, if you didn't have kavana, even though you might make a furrow, according to the Bishamon, davar she'en mitkaven mutar. So the question is, why then does he forbid to move the lit ner? Comes Gemara and says a rule. Kol echad echi mechaven ika isura deoraita ki lo mechaven gazar Rabbi Shimon midrabbanan. When does Rabbi Shimon say davar she'en mitkaven mutar? He only says it in certain situations. Meaning, if, let's say, the melacha that was being done, if a person would have kavana, let's say, if he would be hayav min haTorah, then when he doesn't have kavana, it's asur midrabbanan. It lowers down a notch. Kol hecha dechi mechaven ika isura drabbanan. But where, let's say, if he would have kavana, it would be only isur drabbanan, kilo mechaven shari Rabbi Shimon nechetahila. Then Rabbi Shimon will say, well, you didn't have kavanah, it'll be permissible in totality. Let's review the klal, and then we'll apply it. The Gemara is saying a klal over here, that by a melaka, that if you would do it, you would be hayav midoraita, if you had kavanah when you did it. It is then Rabbi Shimon says, that if you didn't have kavanah, you're not going to be permissible. It'll be asumid rabbanan. The no kavanah lowers it down a notch. However, if you would have kavanah and it would be drabbanan, then no kavanah becomes mutar. Let's apply that to our case of the nir. extinguishing a ner, if let's say he had kavana, and he went out and extinguished the actual ner itself, that already would be isur deoraita. Therefore, if he does it without kavana, it would be asur derabanan. So that would be the reason for the bishamon why he doesn't want you to handle the lit ner. Because even if you don't have kavana, since if you did have kavana, it would be asur medeoraita, even shelo bekavana becomes isur derabanan. Now, take the case of gorer adam kiseh mita v'safsal. There, dragging a bench, even if he would have kavana, let's say, to make a furrow, Rashi says that's considered kel achar yad. That's not the normal way to make a furrow by dragging a bench. So the kel achar yad, the change of doing it through an unusual way, would make it isur d'rabanan. So therefore, since if he'd have kavana while dragging the bench, the chair, etc., it would be isur d'rabanan. When he doesn't have kavana, it becomes mutar. So that's at this point the Gemara's klal. Only question that the Tosafot has over here is that even by extinguishing, in most cases, especially according to the Bishamon, it's only isur d'rabanan, even if he had kavana. Because the only time the Bishamon says you hayav in extinguishing is if you're doing it because you need the positive result. You need the coal. Right? You want to make a coal on top of the wick. However, just extinguishing to get rid of the fire, that's a melachash in asidicha legufa. So that would be the rabbanan. So therefore, Tosfot says even extinguishing in those cases is the rabbanan. To that, Tosfot answers, you have to say that the Gemara means over here, when you would extinguish with the intent in order to make a coal, it would be isu deoraita. So therefore, when you're not mekaven, which is the case where you're just picking it up and it went out by mistake, in that case it would be isud rabbanan. You have to throw that extra condition in just to make the case an isud deoraita. However, there are other rishonim that learn differently. For example, in that, what Rashi said, for example, Rashi said by dragging the bench, that's considered kal achar yad. Therefore, dragging the bench even with kavana would be isud rabbanan. The Rishonim ask on Rashi that that's not considered kal achar yad, first of all, dragging a bench, because that's how you make a furrow in the ground. You drag something, whether it's a plow or a utensil. So, and they say if that's considered kal achar yad, then why don't you say also when you're taking the ner, that's also considered kal achar yad, which is you don't normally extinguish a fire by taking the ner. So if that's kal achar yad, this would also be kal achar yad. So somebody showed him the Rashba, the Ramban, they want to learn the reason why the case of dragging the bed is mutar when you didn't have kavana, and when you did have kavana, it's only sud rabbanan. Because they're talking about where you did it in your house. That making a furrow in your house, that's not considered a normal furrow. Normally you make it outside. Inside the house, you're really destroying the house itself. So they say the way that Lashon is, Shekan medubar kesheoseh haritz babayit. It's talking about where you're making the haritz in the house. Bareu mekalkel. Hilkach en kan isu deoraita. So therefore, let's just review it. Bottom line, the Gemara is saying the reason why the Bishamon says it's forbidden to handle the ner when it's lit is because the concern you might put it out, even though you don't have kavana. But since if you would do a deoraita, meaning if you do a deoraita in a way that would be hayav deoraita, according to the Bishamon, you'd be hayav. So therefore, even when you do it b'li kavana, you're going to be hayav midrabbanan. So that's why it's asur. However, in a case where, let's say, it's only isud derban, even if you had kavana, for example, making the faro either according to the Ashiz because it's Karah Hadiyad, because you're doing it in a not normal way, or according to the other Rishonim that because you're doing it in your house, and that's not the, that's the, you mikalkel, you're destroying, so therefore it would be Sudra Rabbanan. So therefore in a case where you didn't have Kavanah at all, it would be Mutar. That is the answer at this point, but the Gemara challenges that. The Gemara says, can't be. Mativ Rava. Rava brings a question. Mochre Kesut. People that are selling clothes. These clothes have sha'atnez in them. They have a woolen-linen mixture. So the Gemara says, Mochrin Kedarkan. They could sell their wares in the normal way, meaning they could wear them. Which means in the olden days, the salesman would actually model the clothes themselves. They were like the mannequins. So therefore, they're allowed to wear the sha'atnez in the normal way. Ubilvad, shelo yitkaven b'hama mipnei hama, ubegeshamim mipnei geshamim. So long as they don't have kavana, that in the sun, that they're wearing the clothes to protect themselves from the sun, or in the rain, that they're wearing the clothes to protect themselves from the rain. So long as they're just wearing it to sell, not having kavana to wear it as clothes, so to speak, which is protection, it's okay. That's sinu'im. Those are the people that are mahmir, the people that are stringent on themselves. Mafshilin b'makeh la'horehin. As we learned earlier in this case, they would put it on a stick, the clothes, and they would hang it over their shoulders. They didn't want to wear the sha'atnez at all. Those are the mahmirin. But the guys who want to follow the halakha, they could wear the sha'atnez, so long as they don't have kavana to benefit from it. So comes Gemara and says, Ve'acha. But over here, Dechi mechaven isura deoraita ika. Over here, if they would have kavana to benefit from the sharpness, from the clothes, it would be considered isur deoraita. They're wearing sharpness. Ki lo mechaven shari Rabbi Shimon lechataida. And still, when it's they're not having kavana, Rabbi Shimon is clearly saying it's permissible. Which means, so long as they don't have kavanah, he says it's mutah for them to wear the clothes. So you see that rule that we just proposed is not so. And therefore, back to the question, why did the Rabbi Shimon say it's forbidden to move the ner? Don't tell me because it's isur d'rabbanan in a case where you're not going to have kavanah. Because adrabah, he holds, even in a case if you had kavanah, would be isur d'oraita. Still, if you didn't have kavanah, it's mutar, as we just saw in the case of sha'atnez. So back to the question, why does the Bishop want forbid to move in there? That's lit. So the Gemara says, Ela Amar Rava. Rava comes along and says, Hanach laner shemen uptila hu'il v'na'asim basis Ledvara Isur. New reason. The reason why you cannot move the burning flame is because the ner, that means the receptacle, the oil in the receptacle, the wick in the receptacle, all are considered a basis. They're a base that's holding mukseh. What's the mukseh? The flame itself. The flame is mukseh. Why is the flame mukseh? It's mukseh mahmat isur. True, it's not a vessel, a flame, but its primary function is to burn, let's say, which would be asur on Shabbat, to cook. And therefore, the flame itself has a din of mukseh. Now, where is the flame resting on? Well, it's resting on a wick. Well, the wick would be considered a base. The wick is resting on the oil. So the oil would be considered also a base for mukseh, as well as the entire receptacle itself that's holding everything. And therefore, when it's slid, it has the status of a basis, the dvara asur. Nothing to do with that it might go out. You're not allowed to move a base that's holding mukseh. That's one of the types of mukseh that even Rabbi Shimon holds of. Now, the Tosafot on top of the daf comes along and says, wouldn't you need to say that the shemen is also considered a base? You know, what was the matter just saying that the wick is a base? or the ner itself is the base? What did you have to throw in that the oil is a base also? So he says, because if you didn't say that the oil is also serving as a base to the flame, it would be permissible to move it. Why? Because then the oil would be considered heter. Now we have a rule. When you have a heter item with an isur item in the base, so then already it would be permissible. Especially where the oil is more substantial than the other things over there, for example, the isud, the flame. So therefore, if you didn't say that the oil was a basis, then already you'd have a flame with non-mukse oil. The oil would overpower because it's more substantial, and therefore you'd be able to move it. But now that we're saying that the oil itself is a basis l'dvara mukse, so therefore it is forbidden. So the all three things over there are basis l'dvara isud. Gemara goes further. Gemara says, Amar Bizera, Amar of Ase, Amar of Yohanan, Amar of Hanina, Amar Rabbi Ruminus, Li Hitir Rabbi Letaltel Mahta Be'efra. All these rabbis, starting with Rabbi Zera, said, in the name of Rabbi Ruminus, Li Hitir Rabbi, to me, Rabbi was Matir, the Taltel Mahta, to carry or move a Mahta would be like a shovel, Be'efra, that had ashes in it. Now, a shovel like this, the assumption is that it is Mukse. The primary function of a shovel like this is to stoke coals and shovel coals. So it would be like mukse as a kli shemelachto l'isur, a vessel that its primary function is isur. Here, interestingly, there was ashes in the shovel as well. Now, the normal assumption is ashes should also be mukse, because they're really purposeless. And still it says that there was ashes in the shovel, and Rabbi was matir to move the shovel, as if it did not have a status of mukse, even though we would think that it becomes a basis. The shovel now is a base that's holding mukse items, and still they were matir it. Rashi. Let's read Rashi on the third line. Amar Avruminus li yitir Rabbi letaltel machta. Avruminus said, Rabbi was matir to me to move the machta shel levona be'afra. It was the ashes from levona. Levona is a spice, frankincense. So they burnt it, but it was ashes now. Kasal kadatak be'efra im efra ka'amar. Meaning with the ashes, sha'efer mukseh. Now the ashes were mukseh. Ve'lo ayut sirikino, they didn't need them. Vashmi'inan de'agav mahta di'ika turat keli alea til tila im efra. That since they were holding the mahta, and the mahta itself, you're able to move it, let's say, the tzorek gufo, the tzorek mekomo, so the ashes did not make it worse. The shovel itself, you can move it if it was, let's say, empty. Would be no question. Tzorek gufo for its purpose, or tzorek mekomo. The hadush is, even though the effort was in there, they still allowed, didn't ruin it. So the Gemara says, Amar lerabi zera lerabi aseh. Mi amar Rabbi Yohanan acheh. Rabbi Yohanan was one of the rabbis that related this story here. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yohanan really say such a thing should be permissible? That then didn't we learn in a Mishnah? Notel Adam Beno. A person is able to carry his son, va'even biyado, even though his son is carrying a rock. That's a chidush we're going to learn later on, even though technically now you're holding mukseh through your son. The rabbis were lenient in cases where, let's say, the child is crying and you can't stop him, and the only way is by lifting him up. So they were lenient even though he's holding mukseh. Or, this is the case we need, kalkala, you're allowed to transport a basket, va'ebin betocha, even though there's a rock in the basket. Va'amara baba barhana marav yuhanan bekalkala mele'a perot askenan. But we're not talking about a regular basket. It's a basket that's filled with perot, with fruit. And it also has a rock. Oh, so since it has davar heter, since it has permissible items there like the fruit, so therefore even though there's a rock in there, so it's considered a basis davar heter davar isur, it's permissible. Ta'ama di'id ba'peri. The only reason why it's permissible is because it has fruit in it. Ha'let ba'peri. La. But if it didn't have fruit in it, it would be asur. So therefore he was asking him, how could you tell me that he was allowed to move this shovel? This shovel now should become a base for mukseh because it's holding ashes. And the ashes are purely mukseh. Which means the only reason why they allowed you to move a basket with a rock in it, which is also a basis, is only because you had davar heter and you had fruit. So the fruit are more valuable than the rock. But over here it was just a shovel with ashes in it. So therefore it's total mukseh. The mahtah should become a basis davar isur. So this is the question that Rabbi Zera asked Rabbi Aseh. Comes the Gemara and says, Ishtomem kisha'ahada. This is actually a pasuk from Daniel. The Gemara is playing on the words over here. Ishtomem kisha'ahada. He was silent for a moment, which means he didn't have the answer. He didn't understand how was it able to move the mahta. Ve'amar, and then he said, Hachanamed itba kartin. Yeah, we have an answer. There were small, granules of spices that were in there. Which means, you're right, there was ashes, but there was some specks still of levona that weren't burnt yet. So therefore, you have heter and you have isur. So it's like the case of the fruit with the rock. So therefore it's a basis davar heter v'isur. That's why he allowed him to move the shovel. Amar Abaye. Abaye said, nothing doing. Kartin be Rabbi mi hashive. You're talking about now a story that took place in the house of Rabbi. Rabbi was considered ashir, he was wealthy. You think a little granule of levona means anything to Rabbi? And therefore, maybe to somebody else it has value. But to Rabbi, it has no value. The Gemara's assumption now, even though it might be valuable to somebody else, but if the owner doesn't care for such a small thing, so therefore it's not going to be considered enough value to make it a basis, advar, heter, and isur. Where does the Gemara prove this from? The Gemara says, v'chi te'ma hazul ha'aniyim. Well, maybe you'll tell me, fine. Maybe Rabbi doesn't have use for a little granule of levona, but bottom line, there's value. Aniim, for example, poor people would use it. And therefore, maybe it doesn't go according to the owner of the item. Maybe it goes according to the value to people. Bottom line, if there's a guy out there in the world, let him be a poor person, that to him granules are hashuv. So therefore, when the granules of levona are with the efer, that should make it mutar to carry. So the Gemara says, no, that can't be. That, and yeah, because we learned by the laws of Tumah. We have a bright, the bigdei aniyim la'aniyim. The clothes of the aniyim are received Tumah for aniyim. What does this mean? Meaning the aniyim, the poor people, they use even small patches for their clothes. For example, even a cloth that's 3x3 etzba'ot, which is a very small amount, or that she says, where you have, let's say, a garment that they use very thick stitching, where normal, let's say, rich people don't use it. So since that's hashuv for an ani, so therefore for them, it'll receive tumah. Because once it's considered a garment that's hashuv, it becomes susceptible to tumah. Bigdei aniyim la'aniyim. Bigdei ashirim la'ashirim. And for that matter, the clothes of an ashir, they use garments 3x3 tefahim. It's got to be a little bigger. But that size, if they own it, certainly it'll be tameh, susceptible to tumah for them. As a matter of fact, even for aniim, because aniim also, all the more so, would use a garment of 3x3 tefahim. Therefore, it's considered hashuv to them. So the Gemara says, aval de'aniim la'ashirim lo. But a garment that's owned by the ani, 3x3 etzba'ot, now if an ashir comes along and has that garment, he's not the owner of it, so it will not be subject to the laws of Tum'ah. Only Bigdei Aniyim La'Aniyim, only the clothes of poor people for themselves. But the clothes of poor people, if let's say an Ashir gets that garment, it's not going to be susceptible to Tum'ah. So comes Rashi and says, let's read Rashi, Bigdei Aniyim, Shalosh al Shalosh, that's Itzba'ot. O Shechutin Abao, they have thick stitching. Havu Bigadim Na'anim Nenyan Tum'ah. Bigdei Ashirim, Shalosha al Shalosha, that's 3x3 Tefachim. Havu Bigadim Na'ashirim, Vekosikin Na'anim. Well, the most of the Anim, because if the Ani uses a 3x3 Itzba'ot, well, the most of them use 3x3 Tefachim. Aval, Bigdei Aniyim Na'ashirim. But the clothes of an Ani, meaning he owns it, for an Ashir, lo ava bigid gabayu. For them, let's say, it's not considered hashuv, ve'lo mekable tum'ah. And therefore they'll not receive tum'ah. So we'll say the same thing by mukseh. Something that's in the house of a rich man, for example, Rabbi, for this karton, these granules of levona, even though they're hashuv for an Ani, since they're not hashuv for him, so therefore they're going to be considered mukseh. Just like the clothes of an Ani do not become Tameh for an Ashir. Why? Because bottom line, the one who owns it, this already is for him. But for other people, it's not considered Hashuv. So to say the same thing by the Karton Chelebona. For a bee who owns it, let's say, that's going to be considered worthless. Even though, for somebody else, it's considered Hashuv. So therefore, we're back to the question, how did Rabbi allow to move this machta with the efer? So the Gemara says, Ela amar Abaye. Abaye comes along and says, Midi da'ava agraf shel re'i. We're going to give it a status of a graf shel re'i, which means a bucket, that bucket made out of usually pottery, that carries excrement. Which means even though excrement obviously is mukseh, but the rabbis were lenient. There's a bucket of excrement in a place where people are sitting and it's in their way and it smells. So they didn't, they weren't strict that you have to sit in front of this all day long. They allowed you to remove it. It's called the graf shel re'i. So they're lenient. So the same thing over here. You have a shovel filled with dirty ashes. So the rabbis are dinah of a graf shel re'i. So the reason why I allowed him to move it is because it's repugnant, let's say. So comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rava. Rava says, wait, that's your reason? Shtei teshuvot bedavar. I have two refutations. Hada, number one, Rav shel re'i ma'is, ve'halo ma'is. First of all, there's a big difference. You know, a bucket of re'i, of excrement, that is disgusting. That is ma'us. It smells, it's repugnant. However, this is ashes. I mean the most pleasant, but you can't say it's ma'us. Number two, ve'od grav shel re'i migle ve'ay michse. A grav shel re'i is revealed. However, this shovel is covered, which means it seems these shovels over here used to have a cover over them with holes. So let's say the smell of the smoke would go through the holes. So therefore you're not even seeing the ashes. The ashes are actually covered under a flap that's on the shovel itself. So you can't call that a graf shel re'i. Graf shel re'i means it's exposed, but not it's covered. So we're back to the question. How did Rabbi allow to move the shovel? Ela amarava. So Rava comes along and gives the answer. Ki avinan be Rav Nachman, when we were in Rav Nachman's house, hava metaltelinan kenuna agav kitma. Kenuna is also some sort of shovel. He says, we used to carry this kenuna, even though there was kitma, even though there was ashes in the kenuna. And even though with the ashes there was shivrei etzim, Shivrei Atzim has little pieces of wood. Now, from the fact that it says Afalgat Diikalei Shivrei Atzim, sounds like Shivrei Atzim are a problem. So it's clear that Shivrei Atzim, these little pieces of wood, are considered mukseh because they're not usable. But still, how does that answer the question? So now you have Shivrei Atzim that are not usable, and you have Efer. The explanation is this Efer over here was specifically designated before Shabbat to be used for a heter purpose. For example, to cover up saliva or things like that. Like Rashi says, Ela, dibur batil Ela, Ela amara baye, ha deshari le litaltel machta be'efra. The reason why we allow to transport the shovel, mishum de efra ma'is ale l'rauto. I'm sorry. I'm reading the Rashi earlier. Agat Kitma, please. Rashi Agat Kitma. Actually, read Kenuna. Kli Nechoshet. It's a metal vessel. Shemivim bo ha'ur lefnes sarim netchamim. So they used to use this for nobility. They used to bring like the hot coals in front of them in this vessel in order for them to heat themselves up. Agat Kitma. Rashi, very important. Shayut sirichin le'efro. They needed this effort to either cover saliva or excrement. So therefore the effort in this case is not mukseh. What was the hiddush over here? Even though there was mukseh in there, what was the mukseh that was in there? These little pieces of wood. The hiddush is that the effort is more valuable than the little pieces of wood, and therefore it was okay. So now let's apply that same principle to the bee's case. The bee's case now is that he allowed him to carry the shovel with the ashes in there, because these ashes, they were used, which means they were non-mukseh, which means the ashes over here were 100% heter. Why? Because they were going to use it either for a permissible function. Comes the Gemara and says, and so it actually comes out that in retrospect, now when we're learning what Rabbi was matir, you know, he wasn't matir to move it because of the keli itself. Originally, we were learning he was matir it because the machta itself was mutal etzor gufo vekomo, even though there was ketma in it. Now we're saying no. But the reason why we're able to move, because the kitma itself was non-mukseh, which means this kitma itself was permissible. It was heter. Originally we thought that even though you had mukseh in there, still they allowed you to move the vessel, because it was a kenishma to the yisur, the tzorik gufo, the tzorik bekomo. Now we're saying no, that the kitma that was inside was 100% mutar. Comes the Gemara and says, metive, we have a question. What's the question? Veshavin, meaning all the rabbis agree. Who are the rabbis in Mukseh? Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Shim yesh ba shivrei petila shasu letaltel or letaltela. If let's say you have a ner and it lit through Shabbat and then it extinguished, according to Rabbi Shimon, no problem. It's not Mukseh. However, Rabbi Shimon will agree, if let's say in this ner, that has some oil in there, there's also now broken pieces of wick. Shivrei petila. He says what? It's mukseh. Why? Because shivrei petila, the broken pieces of wick, are, it seems, mukseh, obviously. And therefore, even though you have heter oil, but with mukseh wicks, therefore it's going to be asur. So let's ask the same question by the case of the machta. Even though you have, let's say, ash that you're going to use, but you have shivrei etzim, so the shivrei etzim should not allow you to move the machta, just like the shivrei petila does not allow you to move the ner. Rashi. Actually, let's read one more line. Gemara says, Amar Abaye, de Gelila Shanu. We're talking about Gelila. What is Gelila Rashi? De Gelila Shanu. Shashuvot lahem, meaning in the Galil. What was special about these people in the Galil? Shehashuvot lahem shivre petila. For them, broken wicks were valuable. She'en begadim shel peshtan mitzuyim lahem. Because they didn't have too much flax in the Galil. Hilkach lo batle. Therefore, these broken wicks do not become batel. And therefore, you have oil, which is non-mukseh, with broken wicks, but the broken wicks are more valuable than the oil. And therefore it's a basis, ledvar eter nisur, but the isur is more valuable, therefore they didn't allow to move the ner. But in the case of shivrei etzim, with the ashes are more valuable than the shivrei etzim, and therefore it's permissible, just like the case of the kalkala with the perot and the eben. The perot are more valuable than the eben, so that's the way that she learns begilila shanu. Begilah Shanu meaning, since the petilot are very hashuv to them, why? Because after Shabbat they'll take these shivrei petilot and they'll use them for, you know, for clothes or something, because they don't have pishtan. Therefore, even though now they're mukseh, you don't say they're batel to the oil. On the contrary, they're considered hashuv, and therefore they do not allow to move this there. That's the way that she learns. Tosfot has a different explanation. If you want to see it inside Tosfot. Tosfot, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down in the bottom. Tosfot, Begilah Shanu. Mefaresh Benutam, Begilah Shanu. Shehaya lahem rov shemen. He learns the opposite way. He says in the Galil, they had a lot of oil. And therefore, since that's such an abundance of oil, that little extra oil that's left in the Ner is not hashuv to them, and therefore the fact that you have shivre petilot, the broken wicks, so that's going to overpower it. So either way, according to the Rashi, it's because the shivre petilot are hashuv, or it's because the Tosfot that the oil is not hashuv, and therefore it makes the shivre petilot make it a basis and advar isur, makes them hashuv. Very good. So let's just review, and that's the end of this piece. Came out, we saw Rabbi was matir to carry this shovel. The bottom line answer is because the kitma was designated for a heter purpose. Okay? What was it designated? To cover a rock or tzo'ah? Okay? Okay. We go further. Actually, I want to just read this Rashi. That's why I paused for a second. Let's read Rashi. Agav Kitma. I'm reading in the middle. Ve'ad Rav Ruminus Nameh Hay Machta Be'efrad Ka'amar. That what it said, that they were matir. The machta be'efra means machta b'shvil efra, which means they will matir the machta because of the efer shayat sarich lo v'data yu ale me'etmon v'ributa shmi'inan afalgav de'ika ale shivne etzim, which means even though in the case of Rav Ruminus, in his machta, there was also shivrei etzim. And the idush was, since the ashes were designated to be used, so Rabbi was matir. Why? Because bottom line, the ashes are more valuable than the shivrei etzim. That's already the hidush. So it was the ashes that were the matiring factor. Mm-hmm. We thought originally, even though you had ashes, they allowed it. Now we're saying, no, because you had ashes, they allowed it, because otherwise it would be a basis to the shivrei etzim that were in there, and the shivrei etzim are definitely mukseh, so you wouldn't be allowed to move, it would be a basis. But since there was ashes, yani be'efra means bishvil efra, because of the effort that we had. Originally we thought that it means, you know, despite. So even though the had ash. Now we're saying it's because of the ash. Makes sense. Okay. We continue. Gemara says, new subject. Levi bar Shemuel Ashkechinu l'Rabbi Abba u'Rav Huna bar Chiya davu kaime afetcha debe Rav Huna. Let's get the names here. Levi bar Shemuel found Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna bar Chiya, that they were standing afetcha, they were standing at the gate or the door of Rav Huna, the bar Rav Huna, the house of Rav Huna. Amar lehu. So Levi bar Shemuel tells the rabbis, "Ma'o la'azir mita shel tarsiim b'Shabbat." Is it permissible to put together a tarsiim bed on Shabbat? A tarsiim bed, if you look at your Pirush Chai at 384, it's really like a portable cot. That's the way we would understand it, which means you just, you know, flip it open and it turns into a bed, and you flip it closed. So the question was, are you allowed to open it on Shabbat? Again, it's not, it doesn't need any assembly. You don't have to bang in pieces and things like that. You just have to fold it open. It's like a portable cot. Rashi tells us who used these portable cots. If you look at the Rashi says, Sorfeni Hoshet, like the blacksmiths or the coppersmiths used to use this. It seems they used to travel from place to place, and they would carry a portable bed with them. Or gerdim. Gerdim would be the weavers. They go from city to do their work. So this was a convenient bed for them to travel with. So the shayla was, can you open up such a mitash tarsim on Shabbat? Amru le shapir dame. He told them, mutar, no problem. Ata lekame de Rav Yehuda, amar ha Rav Shmuel da amre tarvayu. Says, what do you mean? Rav Shmuel both said, hamachzir mita shel tarsiim b'Shabbat hayav hatat. He had a diverse opinion here. He says, no, you open it up, hayav hatat, meaning a suda oraita. What's the suda oraita? Bekeh bepatishna, she says, because how do you finish this keli? You open it up. Now it becomes a bet. That's like adding the final touch. The reason why Rashi doesn't say boneh, because it's a very important principle, en binyan bekelim, which means binyan does not apply to vessels, which means if you're building something, it's another story. But here you have a vessel already. So now opening it or closing it, that's not considered binyan. That would be considered, you know, finishing it off. How do you finish it off? You open it up. So therefore, one rabbi says mutar, and you have Rav and Shmuel that come along and say hayav hatat. Meti, may the Gemara ask a question: Hamachazir kene menorah b'Shabbat. Somebody returns the kene, would be the stem, we'll call it, to a menorah, the branch to a menorah on Shabbat, hayav hatat. It seems in the olden days, they would have menorot, that you were able to add stems to it. So let's say you could take it apart. Now he had a hole, takes the stem and he clicks it into the menorah on Shabbat. It's going to be hayav. That would be considered also, makim patish, you're finishing it off. Kanet Saidin lo yachzir. What is Kanet Saidin? So that she tells us, Kanet Saidin, they used to take a stick, and they would put a cloth at the end of the stick, and they used to like paint the house, or sometimes they would like add limestone to the walls. Now, the higher you go, so you need to add more extensions. So they would keep on adding more pieces to this kaneh to get to the higher spot. So that was called kaneh shel tzaydin. Tzayid. Tzayid is somebody that placed his house. Actually, we do have a picture to this. If you look at 385, you see it. It's like a brush at the end of it, where they would plaster the house with, and they keep on adding, extending these pieces. So it says, lo yazir. You shouldn't add an extension on Shabbat. V'imihzir patur aval asur. But in this case, it would only be forbidden medrabanan. But she says, why is this more lenient? Patur she'edzik gamro, because it's really not considered finishing the vessel. She'edzik lazuru farikot tamid, because she's constantly taking it apart and putting it together again. So if it's not really permanent, it seems by the menorah you would leave the stem in there. So therefore, it's more like you finish the keli. Here, it's more temporary because you add, you take out, you keep on adding. So it's patur aval asur. Rabbi Simai Omer. Rabbi Simai gives a different case. Keren agula hayav. Keren peshuta patur. These were instruments. If you look at your picture book, 386. 386 is keren agula. That looks like a shofar. It's a horn in the shape of a shofar. It had holes in the actual shofar itself. And to get different sounds out of it, they would place little keren, as little pegs or tubes in the holes, and they would give it different sounds. Now it seems in the keren agula, they would place them very tight. And therefore he says this is considered hayav. Keren peshuta is more like a straight horn that has the same holes. If you add those tubes into the holes to get the sounds, that would be patur. Let's read Rashi. Keren agula v'keren peshuta. Shnei min kli zemer. They're both instruments. V'u'asui nekabim nekabim. Right? They're made with holes in them. Kekevra like a sieve. U'machdis b'em halilim. They put these tubes in there. U'motzi'in kolot. Harben. Things have a lot of sounds. Keren agula ma'ase umanu. The rounded one, the keren agula, the one that looks like a shofar, it's ma'asuman. It takes craftsmanship to get these tubes in. You actually have to place them in very tightly. That's considered an actual melacha. Which means the one that was straight, when you put the tubes in, it's really not tight. There's extra space. So it's easy to take in and take out. So therefore you're patur. Now, where's the question from this braita? So Rashi tells us where they're hitting the question from. Continue Rashi. Katani mihat. Bekane menorah dehayav. Which means bottom line, when you put together the kane menorah, when you add a stem to the menorah, we said on Shabbat it's going to be considered hayav. So seemingly that should be similar, just like you finished off the menorah. So too, when you open up the mitashel tarsim, you open up the bed, so also should be hayav. So therefore, why did the rabbis tell me over here? Who were the rabbis? The rabbis were Rab Abba and Rav Huna bar Hiya, but they came along and said mutar. Seemingly, it should be hayav. So the Gemara says, what do you want from them? They have a different bride that they're relying on. Gemara says, Inu damur ki aitana. They're relying on a different braita with a different opinion. Whose opinion is that? We'll see now. Nashmak. Netanya, we have a braita. Malbenot amita. What is malbenot amita? So we have a picture of that, 388. That's like a bed frame. In the olden days, they used to have their bed frames made out of wood. And they used to be placed on a dirt floor. Problem is, they didn't want their wood to be placed directly on the dirt floor. Seems it would decay. So what they would do was they would lift it up, and they would place like pieces in the legs itself in order to elevate it off the ground. Let's read that in Nashi. Malbenot amita ke'en raglayim ketem. It's like small legs they would put on the bottom of the bed. V'yesh lehem bet kibul. Like there was holes in them so they could stick it into the legs. Umachnis tochan nashe kare amita. It's almost like it's a hollow item that they would put the bed frame, the legs of it, in it, so it doesn't touch the ground itself. That's called malbenot amita. What's the next case? The karot amita. Karot amita.
That's the legs itself.
Oh, that's the legs itself, which means they would place the legs first, in the legs itself they would place. V'levachim shel skibas. What is that? So the skibas is actually a bow and arrow. It's the bow. Now, if you look at your picture 389, when you have the bow, you need to make a little piece on the bow where the arrow rests on. So they would add a little attachment, you see where Aleph is, a little attachment to rest the arrow. So you get the three cases. You have Malbenot Amita, that's the pegs, the sockets that they would stick the legs of the bed in. Karot Amita, that's the legs themselves they would attach. And the Levahim Shel Skibas, Lo Yahzir. You should not do any of these things on Shabbat. Do not attach them on Shabbat. V'imehzir. But if you did, the first opinion says patur. Aval asur, it's forbidden with Rabbanan. V'lo yitka. But certainly do not bang them in. Do not place them in tightly. V'im taka hayav hatat. And she says, v'chozik al yedei yitedot. Which is you put bang with pegs and nails, then already it's hayav hatat. Oh, Rashbag Omer, Rabban Shimon Gamliel says, "Im haya rafui mutar." Here's the opinion we're looking for. Rashbag says, if it's loose, it's okay. Which is, if you insert these items, whether it's in the bed, whether it's in the bow, if you do it where it's loose, where it's not tight, mutar. And that's the same thing we could say about the bed. Which means the bed, you're not really doing anything tight over there. All you're doing is opening it up. And therefore, we found an opinion that says, mutar. Just like if it's loose, it's okay. In the case of mitashet tarsim, you're not banging anything, and nothing is really tight, you're just opening it up. Therefore, we found an opinion for those two rabbis, Rabbi Abba, he goes like, the Tana Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. But we have to see the top tosafot. Rabban Shimon Gamliel omer, im haya rafui mutar, ule'el nameh mayri berafui. You have to say also, this mitah shel tarsiim, the way they're opening it up and they're setting it up, they're not doing it where it's, you know, tightly fastened. It's also rafui, it's loose. Okay, it seems they had to connect some woods together. But it's permissible. Why? Because they didn't bang it in. So long as it's rafui, it's loosely attached, it's permissible according to Rashbag. Comes to Tosafot and says, V'kashe ksat, te'echi pali kulehai, temor mehayev hatat umor share afilu l'chetahila. It's still, we have a very diverse machloket here. It's too far apart. Which is, it comes out now, you're telling me that according to Rav and Shmuel, if you put this bed together, hayav hatat. And you tell me according to other rabbis, which was Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna Bar Hiya, they're coming along and saying mutar. It's far machloket to go from mutar to hayav hatat. Second question Tosfot asks. Ve'od tikshi l'Rav Yehuda. Hach b'raita deleka tana de mechayev hatat. Which means, Rav Yehuda was the opinion that said, he was the one that quoted Rav and Shmuel, he said hayav hatat. In this b'raita that we just quoted, there's no opinion that says hayav hatat. Which means in the case of the mitah, and the kera'ot ha-mitah, the levachim shel skibas, it's all patur aval asur. Which means, it's a little dohak that the Yehuda is not represented in the second braita over here. Yes, that's only the imtaka. That's only if you actually banged it in. So Tosafot's going to say that. Tosafot says, "V'yesh tomar da'achi kama le'el ha rav ushmed adma tarba yom ma'azir mitash shel tarsim b'shabbat hayav hatat kishe'eno rafui." Which means they were actually arguing in different cases. When did Rav Yehuda say in the name of Rav and Shmuel that the mitash shel tarsim is hayav hatat? When you actually banged it in. When you did it tightly. And who's that opinion? That's the opinion of Tana Kama in the Braita, ve'lo yitka v'imtaka hayav hatat. What was the other rabbis that said mutar? They were talking about where you did it loosely. When you did it loosely, they were relying on Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel. However, Tosfot does say, "Damri tarbayu ma'azin mitachet tasim shayab hatat keshenu rafu v'imken berafui en sevara lati lechatayla." Logic would say, if they're going to say that if you did it tight, it's chayab hatat, it makes sense that if it was loose, it'll be asumid rabbanan, one notch down. Whereas Rabban Shimon Gamliel will hold that what if you did it tight, that will be asud rabbanan, and therefore if you did it rafui, it'll be mutar lechatechina. So it comes out just to review the machloket that we have over here l'inyan makim patish in these kelim over here. Mitash shel tarsiim comes out. We have a machloket. If you do it tight, meaning mehudak, you fasten it tightly, according to everybody, it's forbidden. But according to Rabban Shimon Gamliel, it'll be asur midrabbanan. Whereas according to Rav Yehudan and Rabban Shmuel, it'll be asur doraita. If you fasten it lightly, according to Rabban Shmuel, it will be asur midrabbanan. Whereas according to the other rabbis of Chaya, based on Rabban Shimon Gamliel's opinion, would be mutar lechatechila. So that's the difference between the mitot and the different opinions over here. Comes the Gemara and says, last point, Be Rav Hama, in the house of Rav Hama, Hava mita galanita. They had a bed that was called the Galanita bed. That she says it was like the Tarsiim bed. It's this portable bed. Hava mehadre la biyomataba. And they would put it together on Yom Tov. Amar leha umid rabbanan l'rava. So one of the rabbis told Rava, "My da'tech, what do you hold? Binyan min atzadi? What do you want to hold? That this is considered binyan min atzad, meaning that she says, because you're not attaching it tightly. So therefore you want to say that this is considered not the normal way of building it, and therefore since you're not building it in the normal way, it's okay. Nihida sira deoraita leka, isura de rabbanan miyaika. Fine. Maybe it's not asumin haTorah, but it should be forbidden. Medrabanan, which means, obviously this rabbi was holding like the opinions that say, even when you put it together, rafui, it's still isur de rabbanan. So he comes back and says, "Amar le ana kerashbag sevir ali. I hold like Rabban Shimon Gamliel that says what? De amari mayarafu imutar, which means he holds that what if it's loosely attached, it's permissible. It's not assumed the rabbanan. Therefore, you see another story where they put together the mitah galanita, which is like the mitah tarsim, loosely. And we continue. The Mishnah says." Notnin kli tahat haner lekabel nitzotzot velo yiten letocho mayim mepene shehu mechabe. There are two dinim in this Mishnah. The first din is that it is permissible to take a keli even on Shabbat and place it under the ner in order to catch the sparks that are flying out of the ner, so they will land in the ke'ara, they will land in the vessel, in order that they don't burn on the table. So basically he wants to put a keli to catch the sparks. The second din is, ve'lo yiten letocho mayim, in that vessel you should not put water into it, because when the sparks land into the keli, it's going to extinguish them. The Gemara will explain exactly the extent to this isur. Is it applicable only to Shabbat or even to Erev Shabbat? We will see that in the Gemara. The Gemara begins, Veha kamevated keli mehechano. You just told me in the Mishnah that it's permissible on Shabbat to take a vessel and place it under the ner in order to catch the nitzotzot. Now we know nitzotzot are mukseh. A spark would be mukseh. And therefore, when it lands in the vessel, you're going to be mevated keli mehechano. We learned earlier in the Perek, in one of the interpretations of Rav Hizda, on Daf Mem Gimal, we learned that it is forbidden to take a keli that's non-mukseh on Shabbat and make it mukseh. How would you make it mukseh? By putting something mukseh in that vessel now becomes a basis, becomes a base to something that is mukseh. So the Gemara says, how could you place the vessel underneath the ner to catch the nitzotzot? You're now mivatel the kli mechano. You're nullifying it from its original prepared state. Amar Rav Huna bered Rabbi Yoshua nitzotzot en bahem mamash. The Gemara answers like an answer above. Sparks do not have any substance to them, and therefore the second they land in the vessel, they go out, and it does not have the ability to make the vessel mukseh. And therefore, even after they go out, it would be permissible to still move the keli. It's not like a regular mukseh item that stays in the keli. This item extinguishes immediately, and therefore the Gemara does not hold it subject to the laws of mukseh, and therefore it's not a problem of mevatel kli mehechano, and therefore it's permissible to place this keli even on Shabbat. Gemara now discusses the second din in the Mishnah. Velo yiten letocho mayim epnei shehu mechaveh. You cannot place in this vessel water because you're going to extinguish. Lematnan stama kerabbi yoseh. Let us say that the Mishnah, which is nameless, the Mishnah doesn't give us an author. Let us say that the author of this stam Mishnah is Rabbi Yoseh. Da'amar gorem nekibuy asur. Because he's of the opinion, as we're going to learn later on in Perek Kol Ketvei HaKodesh, that he holds that not only extinguishing a fire directly on Shabbat is forbidden, but even gorem kibuy. Gorem means to extinguish as in a gerama, which means not direct, indirect extinguishing. The example that the Gemara discusses there is where there's a fire and a person wants to set up a wall of vessels in order that when the fire reaches the vessels, it'll stop it. And the Gemara goes further to even say, even if those vessels are filled with water, according to the Hachamim, they say it's permissible. Now, even though it's inevitable that the fire is going to hit those vessels, the vessels are going to burst, and the water is going to fall into the fire, it's an extinguish, the rabbis, the Rabbanan, are lenient. However, the Biyoseh says it is forbidden, even though you're not directly putting out the fire. It's not kibui mamash biyadayim, it'd be considered gram kibui. So you see later on that the Biyoseh is of the opinion that gram kibui is also asur. So it sounds like he's the author of our Mishnah. You're not actually pouring water into the fire to put it out into the flame. You're pouring water into the vessel, and the nitzotzot are falling into the vessel, so it's indirect. So, and the Mishnah said that's forbidden. That must be shitat Rabbi Yoseh. So the Gemara says v'tisbira. Does that make sense? Imur da'amar Rabbi Yoseh b'Shabbat. When did Rabbi Yoseh say that gram kibuy is asur? That's only on Shabbat itself. Be'erib Shabbat mi amar. Did he discuss the subject of gram kibuy on erib Shabbat? Well, v'chi tema hachaname b'Shabbat, but maybe you'll tell me, yeah, what Al-Mishnah is also talking about on Shabbat, which is when it said that you can't put water in the keli to catch the nitzotzot, that's talking about on Shabbat, and therefore the author of Al-Mishnah must be Rabbi Yosef, that's also Gram Kibuy, that can't be. V'hatanya, because didn't we learn in the Braita? It said, notnin kli tahatane lekabel nitzotzot b'Shabbat, v'enzarich lo ha-be'ayrib Shabbat. You're allowed to place a keli under the ner to catch the sparks on Shabbat, and all the more so on Erev Shabbat you can place that keli there. Since we learned earlier that nitzotzot en behem mamash, so there's no problem mevatekli mechano, so you're allowed to put the keli there on Shabbat, and all the more so you can place the keli there already from Erev Shabbat. Now we have the second din of the Braita. Velo yiten letocho mayim, but you cannot put in that vessel water. Mepneh shu mechabeh, because it'll cause the sparks to extinguish me'erib Shabbat, even on Erib Shabbat. Ben sarich lomar b'Shabbat, and it goes without saying on Shabbat. So you see what this bright explicitly says, that even on Erib Shabbat, this form of kibuy is going to be forbidden. So now we're really in a bind, because we don't know whose opinion is this, which is the Biyoseh said is deen. When the Biyos said his deen on Shabbat itself. Now, unless you're going to tell me that really the Biyos said his deen even on Erev Shabbat, that Gram Kibuy is asur even on Erev Shabbat, and therefore we'll say that our Mishnah is still following the Biyos, but the Gemara had a hard time explaining that. The Gemara is assuming that the Biyos deen was really said on Shabbat itself, Gram Kibuy, but on Erev Shabbat, maybe it's Mutar. So the Gemara concludes and says, Ela Amar Rav Asher. Who's the author of our Mishnah? Afilu Tema Rabbanan. We can even say it's the opinion of the rabbis that argue on Rabbi Yosef. Shani Hacha, because here is different. Because you're bringing the extinguishing closer. What do these words mean? By placing the water in the candy, even on Friday, the rabbis will say it's forbidden. How can the rabbis say it's forbidden? The rabbis are the ones that hold Gram Kibui is even permissible on Shabbat itself. And now you're telling me that on Erev Shabbat, putting water into a keli, it's going to be Asur? So Rashi comes along and says, let's read Rashi Dibur Matril Ela. Ela Amar Rav Asher, Matnitin Afilu Rabbanan. The Mishnah can even be following the opinion of the rabbis. Delo dami legram kibui, because this case is not similar to the gram kibui case. Dehatam kimate deleka lekelim, when the fire reaches the vessels, that wall of vessels, delekau depakalehu, it's the fire that's going to cause the vessels to bust. Vegarma bealma, and it's just a cause, indirect. Avazeshen oten mai mamash tahataner. Here the guy actually is pouring water on the vessel that's under the ner, mechabe mamashu. It's actual kibui. The gezerame be'ojom atu mishashecha. And the rabbis forbade Friday to do this, because she might come to do it on Shabbat. Now the question in Rashi here is obvious. How by pouring water into a vessel is this considered mechabe mamash? Rashi calls it actual extinguishing. Why should it be any difference in the case of kibui al yedei grama? Rashi clearly is making the difference. He's telling you, the case of the wall of kelim, that's a grama. The fire reaches the kelim, they burst, the fire puts it out. It's indirect. That we can understand. But then when he comes along and says, but if you pour the water on Shabbat into this vessel, that's kibui mamash, and therefore not only did we forbid it on Shabbat, but we forbid it on Friday, Gizera Atu Shabbat. And Rashi in the next Dibur Matri says the same thing. Shemekarevet Kibuyo. Because in this case you're bringing the Kibuy closer. Zimen Kibuy Leheja. It's almost as if you invited the Kibuy and you brought it closer. Vehavale Mechabe Mamash. It's considered actual Kibuy. If you were to do this on Shabbat. So in order to understand this Rashi, we must see the Tosafot, Dibura Matrin of Neshim Mikarevet Kibuyo, where Tosafot says in the beginning, Perush, the Gazlin al Erev Shabbat Atu Shabbat, we make a Gezerah that you can't do it on Friday because you might come to do it on Shabbat. Ub Shabbat Yachol Laboli De Kibuy, and on Shabbat itself, in this case, you can come to direct Kibuy. How? Im Yagbiya Hakeli Bishat Nefilat Nitzotzot. Which means, one scenario is, if as you're pouring the water, let's say you lift the vessel up. So now already, you're making an action where you're causing the kibui to happen sooner. Which is by lifting the vessel up closer to the sparks, so now the sparks land on the fire, and you actually did a maaseh. That's not a grama. Grama means you just put up a wall of cups, and now it's happening on its own. Here you're actually doing a maaseh. Then later on in the Tosafot, let's go a couple of lines down, where he says, Aval Hacha. This is, he's quoting from the Rav Porat. Ika lemehash delo dame isur kol kach b'ma shemani akli ta'at anitzotzot v'ika lemehash shema yavo lide kibui. How? Shiyatchil liten amayim. Let's say on Shabbat he starts to pour the water into the keli. Kodim nefilat anitzotzot. Before the nitzotzot started to fall in. Ve'kodim gemara netina. And before he finishes actually pouring the water, yipelu. Now all of a sudden sparks start coming in as he's pouring. What's going to end up happening? Umechabe beyadayim. And then he's actually being mechabe beyadayim. So that's a second scenario that we have to be concerned about. Or like the first option we explained, that he might lift up the keli. Now, even though this kibui, according to Rabbi Shimon, would be only asud midrabanan, because it's a melachas shenasidicha ligufai, you're not doing it to make a coal. So therefore, technically, it's like a gezerah le gezerah, where gozer erev Shabbat to Shabbat, and even on Shabbat, if you do it, it'll only be isur to Rabbanan. So Tosfot says, Hechmiru atu kibui dechayuv hatat. The rabbi still kept his stringency, so you don't come to actual kibui of chayuv hatat. Even though it's a double gezerah, kimnu l'rabbanan dehacha sheyach lemigzar tefeh. The rabbis had an understanding that here you have to be more strict, which means it's breaking the rules. But sometimes when the rabbis felt a necessity to make a gezerah to keep the people away from certain isurim, so when they felt there was a need, even though it was a gezerah and gezerah, they still followed their law. Now, the Rashi, the Piresh, the Ava Mechabem Mamash, the Rashi that we were bothered with, what does it mean Mechabem Mamash? Lav dafka. It doesn't mean that you're actually going to pour water on the flame itself. Ela kelomar sheyuchal lavo ledekibui, which means like he just said, Tosfot. Rashi means what Tosfot said. You can come to kibui mamash. How? Either by raising the keli, or as you're pouring the water into the keli, the sparks are going to fall in simultaneously, and that is kibui mamash. And therefore, they were concerned that you might come to do that on Shabbat. So therefore, the rabbis were osir, even Erev Shabbat, to a case where you can come lidei kibui biyadayim mamash on Shabbat itself. Last but not least, the Tosafot towards the end has an interesting question. He says, based on this gezerah that we're saying that you're not allowed to place water in a keli, even on Friday, in order to catch sparks, based on a gezerah that you might come to do it on Shabbat, so he questions the minhag that some people fill their cups with oil on Erev Shabbat, the cups that they're going to use to light their Friday night candles, but they also place water on the bottom of it. So now what happens, it's similar to the case of putting water in a vessel, the Erev Shabbat, that when the oil finishes, the water is going to extinguish the ner, and we should make a similar gezerah, that this should be forbidden, because a person might come to make kibui mamash on Shabbat, which means, is this practice also subject to this gezerah that we're talking about? Tosafot says in his answer that in some scenarios it would be permissible. And that scenario, he says, is where the kavana of the person that's putting the water is not for extinguishing purposes. If the sole purpose that he's putting it there is to elevate the oil, in order that the oil reach the top of the cup, so therefore he doesn't care about the water extinguishing, so therefore there's no reason to make a gezerah that it might come to extinguish. His intent was never to extinguish. In our Mishnah, the whole purpose why he's pouring the water in the cup before Shabbat is so it can put out the sparks. There already you see the guy's head is in extinguishing, therefore we're going to make a gezerah. But when you're putting water in the ner just to elevate it, it would be permissible. So that's how the Tosafot ends this pirik, and this is the way we end. Hadrach Alan, Hadran Alach, Shira Baruch Anu Ali Olam, Amen Ve'Amen.